From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. And on behalf of our entire staff at Coast to Coast, Merry Christmas to all of you. Later tonight, the amazing afterlife of animals. Here's what's happening. Pope Francis urging those celebrating Christmas around the world to look for Jesus in the face of little children suffering in war-torn and conflict-riven regions from Middle East to Africa to the Korean Peninsula. The pontiff, praying for peace, told the faithful in his traditional Christmas message that the winds of war are blowing in our world and an outdated model of development continues to produce human, societal, and environmental decline. Yeah, he's right. Russian officials barred activist Alexei Navalny from entering the country's presidential race a day after he held nomination gatherings to kick off his run. Russia's Central Election Commission rejected his registration the day after he submitted it, citing a previous embezzlement conviction. He is a foe of Vladimir Putin. Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com, with us for a little bit as we talk about some world events. And John, first of all, Merry Christmas to you and your family.
Thank you, George. Merry Christmas to you, too, and to all of the listeners.
So let's take a perspective of the world as you see it right now. Where do we stand?
Well, where we stand is a holding pattern right now. We have these South Korean Winter Olympics coming up on the 5th of February. They run to the 25th of February, and I don't think anything will be done by the U.S. in North Korea until the opportunity has been given to the folks in South Korea to clear out. I think that the message today from Kim Jong-un was very clear, that they have the nuclear capability, they will use it against the United States, and that Kim's regime thinks that the U.S. controls the entire Security Council. Well, the Chinese and the Russians could have vetoed the latest sanctions that limit crude oil products, especially refined gasoline and diesel fuel, into North Korea. And one more missile launch, George, or nuclear detonation, but certainly a missile launch, will result in potentially a full, complete oil embargo on North Korea, to the extent that that can happen. So I think where it stands right now is that they're rapidly developing their ICBM. Trump knows it. The Pentagon knows it. The plans are well in place right now for an attack on Pyongyang. The Chinese and the Russians take it very seriously right now. And these are last-ditch efforts before, this window passes. But I think that in 2018, unless there's some dramatic change by the North Korean government, I think that we'll see military action in 2018.
And sooner than later, I'm afraid.
I think so, yeah.
All right, John. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you this week as well. Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. Retailers are enjoying some extra Christmas cheer, fueled by high consumer confidence and a robust job market. U.S. retail sales in the holiday period rose, they said, at their best pace since 2011, according to MasterCard Spending Pulse, which tracks both online and in-store spending. The U.S. economy, though, may be basking in the warm glow of solid growth, but economists are nervously eyeing a trend in the bond market that could spell stormy weather ahead. Even though President Donald Trump is touting unemployment at its lowest level in 17 years and Wall Street soaring to new heights, economists are worried about one indicator that is often a harbinger of recession. It's called the yield curve in bonds. How about this? A Pennsylvania utility customer got the shock of her life after checking on her monthly electric bill and seeing that she owed $284 billion. I don't think I'd pay that bill if I were her. Despite the many impressive discoveries that humans have made about the universe, scientists are still unsure about the birth story of our own solar system. Now, scientists with the University of Chicago have laid out a comprehensive theory for how our solar system could have formed in the wind-blown bubbles around a giant, long-dead star. Now, published back a few weeks ago in the Astrophysical Journal, The study addresses a nagging cosmic mystery about the abundance of two elements in our solar system compared to the rest of the galaxy. Now, the general prevailing theory is that our solar system formed billions of years ago under a supernova. But the new scenario instead begins with a giant type of star, which is more than 40 to 50 times the size of our own sun. They burn the hottest of all stars, producing tons of elements, which are flung off the surface in an intense stellar wind. And the star sheds its mass. The stellar wind plows through the material that was around it, forming a bubble structure with a dense shell, and then hence the solar system. Amazing, amazing indeed. Well, at coasttocoastam.com in the carousel, you'll see some pictures of a missile launch, of a test that a lot of people thought over the weekend was a UFO. It was not. But what else is in the skies? Let's check in with Dr. Sky, Stephen Cates. Hi, Stephen.
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to the listeners. George, Elon Musk gave us this most amazing Christmas gift of sorts because so many people on the West Coast saw the SpaceX, the Falcon 9 rocket. Here in Phoenix, George, it was actually visible rising from the horizon. That's only over 375 miles as the bird would fly. And for all the people in Southern California, here in Arizona, people had no clue what it was until we realized later on it was this launch. And you could actually see the first stage breaking away from the SpaceX rocket, the Falcon 9. What's strange about it, George, in conclusion, is I noticed it heading due south after it started to arc up into the sky. And there'll be many more launches like this from Vandenberg. Get a load of this, George. We're looking for the next of many launches, of course, in 2018. But the National Reconnaissance Office is going to launch a so-called secret payload probably as early as January the 10th. And one commitment we'll make to the listeners of Coast in 2018, we'll try to get the skinny on these launches way ahead of time so our listeners all over the place can take advantage of it. George, wrapping it up, the biggest space stories, in my opinion, for all of 2017, probably, or in astronomy to speak of first, had to be the total solar eclipse. Just outstanding. We'll have to wait till April the 8th of 2024 to see it. But from astrophysics and astronomy, the detection, confirmation of gravitational waves from collapsing neutron stars probably ranks as an all-time high. In the live sky, as the moon now moves on just before its first quarter phase, on New Year's Day, the first of two full moons for the month of January. The first one on the first, the wolf moon. The second one we call the blue moon. And there's also going to be, George, a total lunar eclipse on the 31st of January for West Coast observers. Dr. Sky naturally reminds everyone to always remember to keep your eyes to the skies. Email me at drsky, D-R-S-K-Y, at cox.net. And, George, a most Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, of course, to all of our friends.
You too, Dr. Sky. We'll talk to you on New Year's night next week. And welcome back to our Christmas night show. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. And, of course, the program is interactive. That means we'll be taking your phone calls throughout the night as well with our special guests. And a lot of few surprises tossed in here for you. Now, for the next couple hours, we're going to be talking with Ptolemy Tompkins. He's back with us on Coast to Coast. Interest in the afterlife began back in 1990. His research has led him to an examination of the death-centered rituals of the Aztecs and what those rituals have to tell us about our own culture's relation to death. He was an in-house editor at Guideposts and Angels on Earth for just under 10 years. Very prolific author, has written a book with a guest that was just on with me just a few weeks ago. We are going to be talking with him about all his works. Ptolemy Tompkins, back on Coast to Coast. And happy holidays and Merry Christmas to you, Ptolemy.
Merry Christmas to you, George. Thank you for having me.
I'm looking forward to this. Now, when you got interested in the afterlife back around 1990, what was the catalyst? What happened?
Well, it was a strange catalyst, actually. My father had a chance to write a series of captions for a book on photographs of the ancient Maya ruins. My dad was sort of an authority on that. You know, he wrote The Secret Life of Plants in 1973. Yep. He wrote Secrets of the Great Pyramid in 1971. He was kind of a colossus of what would come to be called the New Age. And he didn't really feel like doing it, so he just passed the job on to me. And he said, how'd you like to write something on the ancient Maya? And I thought, well, I always wanted to be a writer. Here's my chance. And I ended up getting really interested in the Aztecs instead of the Maya, because the Aztecs were a culture entirely focused on death. And in the course of spending a year and a half, 2 years, reading about the Aztecs, I was like, wow, an entire culture focused on death. I never really thought about death so much. And the Aztecs sort of taught me about how it's the central issue in human culture. It always has been. And ever since then, I've been fascinated with death, and specifically our culture's disastrous view of it, which is that when the body dies, so do we. We blink out like a TV set, and that's the end of it. And, you know, spent a lot of the preceding years trying to find out if that's not true, and I thoroughly believe it is not.
You have written a number of books that deal with the afterlife, Proof of Angels, The Modern Book of the Dead, The Divine Life of Animals, books with Eben Alexander, our dear friend, The Modern Book of the Dead, of course, and Proof of God, which you just wrote. It came out in September of this year with Bernie Hayshu was on the program. All incredible works, Ptolemy, all of them.
Thank you.
And let's get into some of this where, you know, here we are, Christmas night. We're always live on holidays, by the way. It's a pledge I made to our audience when I first came in here many years ago that we're not going to run tapes. We're going to do live programs so it's interactive and people. And I'm doing it primarily for people who don't have friends or family, who are alone on this night. I don't want them to be alone.
Great.
So, and here we are. But you have looked at Christmas with a different eye, and you say that this is the best Christmas ever. What does that mean?
I'll tell you what it means. Your wonderful producer or program coordinator, I'm not sure who she is, I believe her name is Lisa.
That is our executive producer.
Executive producer, all right. She called me about 10 days ago, and we were discussing whether I should go on to talk about Proof of God, because Bernie had already been on. So she was saying, well, you know, we could have you on, but maybe it's, you're just going to say the same stuff. And I'm not a terribly great promoter, so I was ready to agree with her. And then she said, well, you know, we're trying to figure out what to do for our Christmas episode. You know, we can't quite figure it out. And I said, oh, I know what to do for that. The five reasons why this has been the best Christmas ever. And she said, huh, I like that. Can you do that? I said, sure. And ever since then, I've been putting together those five reasons. It's been quite an adventure.
And let's talk about those five reasons. Now, is this your opinion, or is this something that would hold water with all of us?
No, that's why I want to do it. I mean, I thought, you know, this is Christmas. It's going to be New Year's pretty soon. We've had this incredible year just passed. Let me really try to think big. And I'm on Coast to Coast. Let me try to think about what Coast to Coast means, why do people like it so much, what's it all about. So I tried to come up with the five reasons that explain just the whole thing. I really went for it.
All right.
And I may have failed miserably, but, you know, I gave it my best try.
Tell us what they are.
All right. Reason number one, the world is absolutely falling apart. I mean, you know, we're on the edge of thermonuclear war. Scott Pruitt is the head of the EPA. Puerto Rico is still, to a great degree, in darkness. People are suffering everywhere. A lot of people just can't believe that things are this bad. And the reason that that is my number one reason that this is the best Christmas ever is because this kind of breaking up of the world is mirrored by another breaking up. And that's where your show comes in. I don't know if you're familiar with a poem by William Butler Yeats written many years ago called The Second Coming.
Yeah.
and it's got this fabulous line, the best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. And it has another line, it says, mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. And my God, you know, if ever we lived in a time where that sounded correct, now's the time, right?
You got it.
Falling apart. But Yeats didn't write that poem to complain about the state of things or how bad things were going to get. He wrote it because he felt that as the exterior world of, you know, regular events were falling apart, something else was going on. Something else was falling apart. And what is falling apart was wonderfully summed up by a gentleman who I heard talking as I was listening for this show to start. You had a cut, a little clip of a guy calling in, and he was saying, you know, you guys seem like you're smart. How could you possibly believe in UFOs? How could you possibly believe in life after death? How could you believe in all this kind of stuff, right?
Yep.
And you guys say, well, you know, there's this evidence that people aren't looking at. And that's what you guys do every night.
Hold on, Dolomy. We're going to take a quick break, but we will be back with more. We'll talk about these other four reasons why you think this is the best Christmas ever. Okay, welcome back to Coast with Ptolemy Tompkins, of course, noted author. A couple of his books include The Modern Book of the Dead, Proof of God as well, Map of Heaven that he wrote with Eben Alexander. Ptolemy, let's get back into these five reasons why you think this is the best Christmas ever. The first, of course, was you said the world is falling apart.
Yep, that's reason number one.
All right.
And reason number two, your friend Jack just helpfully reminded me of the specifics of what he was saying earlier. We heard the same guy, and he said, why are you guys talking about UFOs? There's not a shred of evidence. Here's the thing. Jack and all the people like him, and, you know, they're very intelligent people. They're common sense people. The problem is, we no longer live in a world of common sense. I call it the 3 p.m. world sometimes because usually with me, I wake up, I'm full of energy, I write, and around 3 p.m., I'm you know, coffee's worn off. you know, I'm just feeling like, you know, and I just look around at the material world, and there I am stuck in it. That's the common sense world. It's the world of physical objects where miracles don't happen, where UFOs don't fly through the air, where there's nothing invisible. It's just the world of stuff. You know, and
is it the world of skeptics, Ptolemy?
What's that?
Is it the world of skeptics?
Yeah. And they're living in a world, you know, some of the skeptics won't like me saying this. They're in a world that isn't falling apart. It's dead. It's been gone for more than a century. Physical matter, as we're used to thinking of it in our normal day-to-day lives, simply doesn't exist. There is no such thing as matter. James Jeans, the great astrophysicist, said, you know, close to a century ago, the universe is more like, not so much like a great machine, but a great thought. Another great astrophysicist said that the basis of reality is mental. And these were brilliant scientists. And what they're saying is there is no physical world. We don't know. We know we can't quite define what the world is, but it ain't this world of stuff we're living in. We think we're living in that world because it's the world that we've been trained to live in. But we have to train ourselves to get out of it because it's not real. We live in another world. The real world is a world which is not physical. It is hard to describe. Writers like Patrick Harper, Bernardo Kastrup, I don't know if you've had those guys on or anything like that, but what they try to show is we don't live in a world where UFOs exist or don't exist. The reason there are all these arguments is we're about to step into a world where those definitions don't work anymore. We're about to step out of the humdrum, common sense, ordinary 3 p.m. world for good, because it's not real. We're stepping into a new world. And as our exterior world is falling apart, our interior definition of the world we live in is falling apart too. It's really happening. That's what your show is about. That's why people listen to it every night. That's why there's this huge hunger for this stuff. It's not because people are dying to be, you know, fooled by nonsense to get them out of their day-to-day lives. No, inside they know that the day-to-day common sense world that the skeptics tell them about, they know that's not the world they live in, and it isn't. That's the great news. The skeptics are all wrong. They're not wrong because they're dumb. They're wrong because they're speaking from a world which doesn't exist anymore. And that is basically, I don't know if I've described it in any kind of coherent way, but, you know, that's the second reason this is the best Christmas ever, because we are one step closer to the breakthrough, to the point where we will start living in a world we should have started living in a century ago.
I can feel it too. It's close.
You know what I'm talking about? I mean, I'm just like, I feel this stuff, but I don't know when I describe it whether I just sound like an idiot who's talking too long on AM radio and who should talk in, you know, smaller bits.
Nah, you're not an idiot. That is. So what would be number three?
All right, number three. This gets down to a word that I have a lot of experience with, and that is proof. The fact is, Proof of Heaven, that I worked on with Eben Alexander, I wrote most of that book, actually. Mm-hmm. Eben is a fabulous guy, but he's not a great writer. He's a great talker, but he's not a great writer. And
he's a doctor.
He's a doctor. And you know what? Show me a doctor who can write. They are as rare, scarce as hen's teeth.
You can't even read their handwriting sometimes.
Exactly. I killed myself taking Evan's story and turning it into what I suddenly realized was a myth for our time. A myth of a guy who's just going along in the common sense world, gets sucked out of it into this other world, and then is thrown back into the common sense world, and he says to himself, wow, that was so real, but was it all a dream? And then he has this moment, and in Proof of Heaven, it's the moment when he sees that picture of his sister, who he realizes was the being he met in that other world, and he realizes, no, it was real. And when we were doing the book, I said, Evan, this is the most universal story there is. It's the oldest story there. You know, go back to Gilgamesh. It's like this is at, you know, what you're trying to tell here is the most universal story in the world, and I'm going to make it that way. And he said, as he usually did, well, that sounds great. And I had this crazy experience of, you know, when I wrote the book, I would talk to Evan on the phone, and then I would type. And sometimes I would just go into this trance. There's a section of the book where he's in the other world, and all this stuff is happening to him. And I was using my writing to describe it, mm-hmm. but it was all Evan's experience. And I just had this feeling like, wow, I have been thrown this football. It's my job to make Evan's story, which he cannot turn into a coherent, gripping story. It's my job to make it happen.
Yeah, you've got to do it.
And I did it.
Oh, you did. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
Great story, great book.
Nobody knows I did it, but I didn't really mind about that. That was okay. But the thing is, the reason I'm bringing it up is not because I want to whine about not getting enough credit for writing the book, but because it was coming down to the 11th hour. They didn't have a title for the book. And the marketing department was saying, we need something with the word heaven in it. But we can't figure out what, you know, because heaven sells. Well, what are we going to do? And so I said to the editor, I said, give me 10 minutes. I'll come up with a title. So I thought, and then it came to me. I said, proof of heaven. So my editor said, let me go check with the marketing department. She came back. She said, they love it.
Huh.
And that's how proof, that's how this word suddenly exploded into, you know, the world of discussion. Oliver Sacks, you know, was driven crazy. All the you know, the new anti-God squad, they were driven nuts by this book. And one of the things that propelled it into this discussion was that word proof. How do you get off saying that you have proof of anything? You know, that was one of the, and as I thought about it, I was like proud of it. I was like, well, I don't know how I came up with that word, but that really is the word, because the skeptics are looking for proof. They're saying there is no proof. So how do we?
And a lot of them want proof.
Yeah, that's their argument. There's no proof. And when Evan heard the title was going to be Proof of Heaven, he was like, well, wait a minute. Maybe we should call it My Proof of Heaven. But at that point, the horse was out of the stall. You know,
right.
Was like, no, it's going to be Proof of Heaven. And that's what drove everybody crazy. Here's a neurosurgeon, a celebrated neurosurgeon, and he has proof. But what that made me realize over the course of time is how central this word is, proof. And my third reason, this is the best Christmas ever, is because we are getting rid of, we are deconstructing this word proof. We are asking the skeptics, okay, what do you mean by the word proof? And when people, and when skeptics talk about proof, what they're usually talking about is, they'll say, you think you saw a flying saucer. Well, nobody else did.
Right,
well,
and it didn't land, and we don't have any hardware.
Yeah, but you have these strange, you have these strange episodes where, just like with Evan, and just like, you know, countless fairy tales, there are these pieces of evidence. There are pieces of hard evidence. I forget about the guy that the UFO landed, and they came and they made pancakes or something like that, and then they left, and the guy was like, "Well, that must have been a dream," except he had a bunch of pancakes. And he sent these pancakes off to be analyzed. You know, this is all, you know, absolutely solid. And the pancakes were analyzed, and they were pretty much normal pancakes, except they didn't have any salt in them. And Bernardo Kastrup, who is the author who recently told me this story and brought it back to mind, pointed out that when they did the analysis of the pancakes, there was a funny thing. There was no salt in them. And Kastrup then says, you know, in fairy tradition, there's often a lot of, you know, food being offered by the fairies when people visit the fairy world, but there's never any salt.
That's interesting.
So he's saying, so what do we got here? Do we have just some sort of Jungian archetypal fantasy that this guy's having? Maybe, except you know what? There were pancakes. And we live in a world where there's things happening all over the place where the equivalent of those pancakes show up. We do have hard evidence of all kinds of amazing things. You know, there's the visions at Fatima in, 1917, where thousands of people saw the same phenomenon. The flying saucers that showed up along the coast, along the Hudson River, the lower Hudson River,
sure,
just above New York. I think there was a book called Night Siege written on that.
How about
countless people?
How about the most recent government disclosure that they've been studying this for the last 10 years?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And it goes on and on. I mean, your show is like built around this stuff. And you, more than, you know, a lot of people, would know just how solid the evidence is. In terms of proof is, in terms of, like, more than one people have seen these things, and these people are not stupid, and they weren't hallucinating.
And they're not lying.
And they're not lying. Something's going on. What is it? And what writers like Kastrup and Harper are saying is, yeah, they're talking about something real. But when the skeptics complain that there's no hard evidence, they're often right, too, because the nature of all these events is that they're squirrely. They don't like to hold still. They're frustrating. The more you try to put your hands on them, the more they just sort of squeeze out of your grasp. And what Kastrup and Harper say is, does that mean they're not real? No. It means we have to start thinking about what reality itself is in a different way. And that's what I discovered with Bernie when I was writing Proof of God with him. It's like, he had the answer, and so did those astrophysicists I quoted earlier. We don't live in a world of solid matter. We live in a world of consciousness and thought. That's what's real. And we actually do, and, you know, skeptics are going to hate this, we do kind of wake up every day to a mass hallucination. The real world is, in a very real way, a mass hallucination. It seems solid. It seems absolutely regular, and it holds still, and there's just, you know, nothing ambiguous about it. But it's not true, and physics has shown it's not true, and scientists have known that's not true for 100 years, and they've been killing themselves trying to figure out how to explain it, and they can't. But this isn't talked about. But it's all there. It's all solid. Any real physicist will back that up. Is there any such thing as solid mass, as stuff in the world? No, it doesn't exist. You know, everybody knows that, you know, molecules, elements, that there's very little solid mass. You know, the standard thing like dancing woolly masters, you know, look at this table. Well, it's 99.999% empty space. There's very little actual matter in it. It's just a swirling cloud of you know, electrical energy.
Ptolemy, stay with us. We're coming back. We'll pick up the fourth and fifth reasons why you think this is the best Christmas ever. We'll take some phone calls with you, and we'll chat more about some of your work, including the modern Book of the Dead and Proof of God.